Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, KALW's weekly program of arts and cultural affairs. For Alan Farley, I'm David LaTulipe. Keeping things local and somewhat live on this final day of our fall membership drive. So if you've been putting off making your renewing your membership, making an additional donation, or becoming a member for the first time, this is it. And this is the hour that we're going to end the drive. It's very exciting. 800-525-9917. I'll be talking with soprano Melody Moore this hour, who is singing with the New Century Chamber Orchestra for their celebration of the Benjamin Britten Centennial in concerts tonight through Monday, and with composer Kurt Rohde, who is performing as violist in those very same aforementioned concerts, and is having the world premiere of his own work, Artifacts, a rendering for speaker, small ensemble, and projected images performed next week as part of the Left Coast Chamber Ensemble's season-opening concerts called Portraits in Sound. I'll also speak with the artist involved in creating those projected images for Artifacts, Francis McCormick. Plus an in-studio visit and performance by the Black Cedar Duo, which is flutist Chris Palmer and guitarist Steve Lynn. They're performing as part of the Trinity Chamber Concerts at Trinity Chapel in Berkeley this Saturday. Diane Gruby, artistic director of the concert series, will also share some details about her role in curating the ambitious schedule of performances there. So do stay tuned this hour for some great music and conversation. I'll also be giving away some tickets to the Trinity Chamber Concerts later in the hour. Let's begin with a conversation I had earlier this week with soprano Melody Moore. I'm pleased to welcome soprano Melody Moore back to Open Air. Melody is no stranger to the various stages of San Francisco, is a 2007 San Francisco Opera Adler Fellow and former Marilla Opera Program participant. She's back in town to reprise her role, performing Benjamin Britten's Les Illuminations with the New Century Chamber Orchestra. Performances which began on Tuesday in the area as a celebration of Britten's centennial. Melody, welcome back to KALW.
Thank you for having me.
Now, I'm not familiar with this particular Britten work. Could you share a little bit about it?
Yes, this is it's a wonderful piece by Rimbaud. It's the poetry by Rimbaud, who typically was not somebody who did a lot of brutal poetry. I would say that he was more natural, described the outdoors quite a bit. But this was written during the time that he was in his basically heyday with Verlaine at the same, you know, they were lovers at the time. And this piece to me is almost like a precursor to Carnival or Mardi Gras or something. It really sets up a town that is about to be hit with frivolity. And there's also some pagan kind of tree worship and beautiful, beautiful poetry having to do with welcoming the carnal, basically. So it's very robust, this piece. And right off the top, the audience gets, I believe, introduced to that whole atmosphere. So it's pretty great. It's fierce. I would call it fierce.
I'm looking forward to it. Now, it's part of a Benjamin Britten Centennial, which also includes Britten's Simple Symphony and Bartók's Divertimento. More about the NCCO performances that remain in just a little bit. You can also go, while you're listening right now, to ncco.org to learn more. Now, I most recently saw you as the First Lady in Magic Flute.
Wasn't that fun?
How much fun was that?
Oh, we just took that and ran with it. The director did not quite know what to do with us three ladies because we just made up a whole little world for ourselves. We were sisters, and one of us was jealous of the other, and one got more boys, and one was kind of more like a Marilyn Monroe type, and, you know, I was more the, what's the oldest golden girl? I can't remember. Not Rue McClanahan, but the other one. I was one of those. So you know, we just did whatever we wanted.
Uh-huh. And working with Nathan Gunn as well. So.
Oh, fantastic.
Wow.
He was really kind as well. He always, he would come up and ask, well, how are you doing? What else are you doing around town? You know, just really wanted to be involved.
He's a real sweetheart. And that costume made him look like so schlumpy.
No, he's so sweet. And he'd sit back there with his little hand resting against his chin, you know, upset. And, Yeah, he's adorable.
And
yeah.
The inside thing here, Nathan Gunn appeared as Papageno in that same production. Now, earlier this year, you sang in Enchantingly Wicked, which was the music of Stephen Schwartz, set to words from Wicked, The Life and Times of the Wicked Witch of the West by Gregory Maguire, the original book Wicked. And that was with the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus. Tell us a little bit about that performance. What was your role with that? And that was at Davies Hall.
Yeah, it was at Davies, my first time there. I love the Gay Men's Chorus. They are my friends. We got to know each other through a Christmas concert. They wanted basically a soloist to come in and just do a couple of high notes and kind of be fun. But myself and Tim Zalig, the director of that chorus, really hit it off in a kind of a quippy way. We kept kind of throwing little barbs at each other, and everyone loved it. The Gay Men's Chorus loved the fact that I was willing to take him to task, and he was willing to take me to task. So we developed a good relationship. That concert in particular was more than just Wicked. It was all many, many of the pieces that Stephen Schwartz has written. So there were things from his opera, Seance on a Wet Afternoon, that I did in New York City. And those were my two solo pieces. We brought out two pieces from that opera, which was kind of interesting because most people who know him from, I know, his musical theater.
Right, Godspell and Godspell. Wicked. And...
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, you also appeared in the world premiere of Heart of a Soldier by Christopher Theofanidis here at San Francisco Opera, which opened on the eve of the 10-year anniversary of the attacks on the World Trade Center. Now, for those that are unfamiliar with that story, it tells the story of Rick Rescorla, a soldier and hero who saved thousands of lives at the World Trade Center, and you play his widow, I believe.
Yes.
That must have been an extraordinary experience.
To date is the best thing I've ever done. And, you know, there were many, many people who came to see the opera who loved it. There were many who did not. But across the board, the story needed to be told, because this is what we call a real hero. What was the honor for me is that Susan, who I played, came out to see the show. We now have become fast friends, and we call each other sisters. We went wine tasting while she was here, and I've developed quite a friendship from that whole experience. But to me, I don't know that anything will be able to beat that experience.
Is that being performed elsewhere? Is there any plans for that?
Not as of yet. It's... Because there were varying opinions on whether or not the piece should have even been done, it's one of those things we have to tread lightly and see if there is a life for it later. I really do hope so. I do think it's a story that needs to be told over and over and over. This man gave his life to save 2,700 people.
As a former New Yorker, it still strikes really hard with me that anniversary when it comes around. Now, you also performed in the premiere of a Rufus Wainwright opera, Prima Donna, at New York City Opera. I'm wondering if you could talk to us just a little bit about the differences and maybe the challenges between performing an established role and originating a role of new music.
Right. Originating has only really happened to me once, because that was the Heart of the Soldier, in which it had not been premiered anywhere else before. Now, Seance on a Wet Afternoon had been premiered. I believe that was Santa Barbara that it was. And then Rufus's piece began in Toronto. It was either Toronto or London. I can't remember if it was Sadler's Wells at first. But someone else had premiered those. But in terms of what's the difference, number one, I think that audiences know Boheme like the back of their hand. When they're coming to hear me, they've heard quite possibly 3 to 4 recordings of that before. And if nothing else, they may have heard it on a classical radio station and made some opinions. Made some opinions about what kind of weight they think should be singing and who, you know, maybe even physically what they think should be on the stage. So in a way, for me, to originate or to do a new work is quite freeing. Number one, I get to basically determine what I think that character's previous life has been until, you know, the moments before they stepped on the stage. Did they have hot tea? Do they have pets? Do they have sisters and brothers? I get to determine every bit of that life. Mm-hmm. And that, for me, is my bread and butter. So I actually have preferred doing newer pieces. Plus, a lot of the times, the music is so much to chomp into. You must discover that on your own. and the way that somebody else has done it previously is not going to necessarily measure against the way you do it.
Do you find the memorization difficult or just different from an established role versus something brand new, the ink's still wet?
It is more difficult, especially if it's in, strangely enough, if it's in English, because this is a language that we're familiar with, and we can come up with all kinds of different ways to say one phrase. If I'm going to tell you, I really like that shirt you're wearing, I could also say, that shirt you're wearing is nice. There are all kinds of ways that we, in our idiom, come up with saying the same thing. So the memorization can fly out the window quite often with English, because as long as I get the general gist of what I'm saying, I might say anything. But in Italian, it has to be memorized, you know, so brilliantly, because I can't afford to mess up. I can't make up words on the fly in Italian.
Right.
You know, who knows what I'm going to say.
Tell me a little bit about the Rufus Wainwright opera, Prima Donna. I think you described it as a cross between Der Rosenkavalier meets Sunset Boulevard.
Yes. Did I say that? That's brilliant. It is exactly that cross between, because his sonic language, Rufus's sonic language, was a lot of French and German style. Strauss, even some, I would say, Massenet, mixed in with basically the storyline of Maria Callas's life in her Paris hotel, and very reminiscent of Sunset Boulevard as well, a woman who is aging and who has a chance to possibly revive a career, but is letting her own doubt and fear stand in the way of that, and gets quite histrionic about that within her own circle mm-hmm. of life. You know.
And how was it received in New York?
Again, mixed. I'm used to mixed. I tend to just kind of dwell in mixed. Yeah. It was, you know, the fans of Rufus who understand him and who wanted to celebrate him doing this and even striking out were just
rabbit
clamoring, yeah. I mean, at the stage door, you know, an hour before the show. So, but you know, there are always naysayers. There are always people who think, why is he doing this when there are people who, you know, trained to do this? Well, because we keep being told that our art form is dying unless we do something to revive it. And here's a man who's willing to actually step up to the plate.
Right.
And
right.
yet.
You know, well, as you well know, as a student of music, that many of the 18th and 19th century masterworks were greeted with equal reviling by the critics.
Yes, yeah. And we all, and as a company, tried to keep remembering that, Rufus included, saying, "Well, no one liked Carmen."
So after these performances in San Francisco with the New Century Chamber Orchestra, what's coming up?
I am actually covering Tosca at the San Francisco Opera. So I'll be the understudy for Angela Gorgu and Patricia Rossette. So I'll be at all of those rehearsals. And if they needed me, if either of those lovely, lovely women needed me, then I would step on.
Talk to us a little bit, for those who might not be familiar, what it means to be a cover artist for these major roles.
It basically means that you have to be ready to go on, so that you must mentally prepare yourself as if it is already your job to go on. But bearing in mind also that there's a modicum of respect that must happen within rehearsals, in which you stay sort of in the background and just watch and watch the masters do what they do, especially Patricia Rossette, who is such, to me, a model for me. So I'll be more than happy to watch, but you must also be prepared to go.
Hmm, interesting. Yeah. So it sounds like you're getting around, girl. Keep at it.
Trying.
Well, the remaining performances of the New Century Chamber Orchestra's Britain Centennial Salute, which includes Britain's Simple Symphony, Bartok's Divertimento, and Britain's Les Illuminations with soprano Melody Moore, are this Thursday tonight at the First Congregational Church in the East Bay, Saturday here in San Francisco at the Herbst, and Sunday, the 23rd of September at the Osher Marin JCC. You can learn more about those performances at ncco.org. Let's go out with some music from those critically acclaimed 2007 New Century Chamber Orchestra performances of Britain's Les Illuminations, shall we?
Let's do it.
Melody, thanks for sharing some time on Open Air.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Gracias, Mr.
Antique. Text by Arthur Rimbaud, sung by soprano Melody Moore. The musicians of the New Century Chamber Orchestra performing that excerpt from Benjamin Britten's Les Illuminations, a recording from their 2007 performance. That work to be played and sung as part of a Benjamin Britten centennial celebration now through Monday. Details at ncco.org. Good afternoon. Once again, I'm David LaTulipe in for Alan Farley with a reminder that we are in the final countdown moments of our fall membership drive here at KLW, and your pledge could put us over the top and make us stop talking about asking for money until the month of May, if you can believe that. 800-525-9917, or make a gift online at kalw.org. And speaking of things French... Thank you. Claudio Arrau performing Claude Debussy's La Fille aux Cheveux de Lin, or The Girl with the Flaxen Hair. One of the works being performed Sunday and Monday by Eric Zivian as part of the Left Coast Chamber Ensemble's concerts. In this segment of Open Air, I'll be visiting with some of the folks from the Left Coast Chamber Ensemble. Left Coast Chamber Ensemble opens its 20th anniversary season with Portraits in Sound, a program exploring the interplay of music and visual arts, featuring Kurt Rohde's new work, Artifacts, with projected images by painter Francis McCormick and text by Sue Moon. Kurt Rohde is founding member of the LCCE, and he joins me in the KLW studios now, along with painter Francis McCormick. Francis, Kurt, welcome.
Thank you.
Hello.
Kurt, welcome back to KLW. You've been an old hand here for several visits before.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
These opening concerts in Mill Valley on Sunday, September 30th at 7 o'clock in San Francisco at the San Francisco Conservatory of Music. Monday, October 1st at 8 o'clock features music of Carl Schimmel, Claude Debussy, Maurice Ravel, and some music by what's called Rapido, contest semi-finalists and some world premieres. Kurt, I'm wondering if you can tell me about this Rapido composition contest.
Sure. The Rapido competition is sponsored by the Atlanta Chamber Players and the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra. And it's a national competition covering all 50 states, in which the states are divided into regions. So we have the Western region, the Midwest region, you get the point. And each region has been, a particular new music ensemble has been located in each region and asked to perform the semifinal round of the contest. And the winner of the semifinal round goes to the national final round, which is in Atlanta in the winter of 2013.
Wonderful. So the performer, the chosen composers for this concert, tell us a little bit about those.
So these three composers, Dermon Shea, Frank Lee, and Liana Premiani, have each written a work which has the same instrumentation. In this particular case, the instrumentation is piano, oboe, cello, and piano. And this instrumentation is unified throughout the entire competition. So all the composers in all the regions had to write for that particular instrumentation. And for each region, we selected the three best pieces of those that were submitted. And these are the three semifinalists for this particular, for the Western region. And the theme for each piece, the Atlanta Chamber Players have a theme that has to be incorporated into the composition as well. And the theme was the dance. And so each of the composers has in their own way incorporated their idea of what dance is in music. So we have with Premiani's work, this piece uses shaker dances. The Lee work uses Bulgarian dance rhythms. And Shea's work is a series of dances that are broken up and then reassembled as the piece goes on. Dances that would not be recognizable at first until they're actually assembled more fully later on in the works.
That's wonderful to incorporate these composers into the Left Coast Chamber Ensemble in this way. It's an ongoing project.
Yeah, yeah, and we would not have actually known who these people were or their works had we not participated in this particular project. That's true.
Now, this opening concert is called Portraits in Sound, where music and images intersect. You're the founding member and a former artistic member of the former artistic director of the Left Coast Chamber Ensemble. Now, your new piece, Artifacts, explores the passage of time, incorporating some projected images by painter Francis McCormick, who's here to talk about that a little bit, some text by writer Sue Moon, and some narrations as well by Michael Taddei. Can you tell me a little bit more about what we would hear at these concerts with this piece?
Well, with my piece in particular, this is a project that Sue, Francis, and I had dreamed up, schemed up about 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. We started to think about collaborating on a work that would unify all three different mediums. And we met at the De Gerassi artist residency back in the mid-90s. And I had really wanted to have some type of project, but also to some type of experience where the three of us could work together for a long time. And it seemed like this particular anniversary concert, this particular event, was the perfect place for us to pull together our resources and our ideas, because it's the 20th anniversary, and the idea of having this ensemble for 20 years, you know, we're now in our adulthood, and having been there since it was born, to have a piece that sort of deals with the passage of time seemed appropriate for celebrating the 20th anniversary. And the piece itself uses an original text by Sue Moon, in which Michael Taddei, who's our bass player, will be narrating. And the text is, more specifically, it's basically a story told in a series of parts from a very sort of objective, analytical observation of finding objects and talking about where and when and what they are, and then sort of slowly moving away from that tone to a much more personal tone, where she starts talking about the objects individually, the stories of the objects, until it gets to the point where you realize that the person who's written the text, the voice of the text, is actually the person who at the very end is telling you the story about a single object that has real importance to that person's family. So you sort of have telescoped to from something that's less personal to something that's very personal and intimate, and that's sort of the end point of the journey, the journey of the story.
Interesting. The small ensemble you have assembled, what instrumentation are you using for that?
We have flute, bass flute, piccolo, so three flutes, viola, cello, violin, and piano. And the instrumentalists also play other instruments, which I call humble instruments, things like harmonicas and little paper organs that are not tuned. They're just sort of squeak sounds, glasses that are filled with water, things that are just very simple and sort of crude. And in addition to the music and the text, there will be a video projection of art, which I guess, well, Francis can talk about this, but it's continuous with the music from the beginning to the end, and it matches up in a lot of ways with what's going on in the text and in the music, but it's not necessarily mapping in an exact way.
Right, yeah.
Francis McCormick, the artist involved with this piece, Artifact, you mentioned that you guys met at the Gerassi Institute. And I'm wondering, was this your first such collaboration with a musician in this way?
This is my first collaboration with a musician, and when Kurt invited me to participate in Artifacts, because I love his work, I immediately said yes, and it has been just extraordinary. The trajectory of beginning with, I'm a painter, and as much as paintings contain gestures and movement or simulation of movement, they are static objects. So to work with moving imagery was a real challenge, and it was, sort of exciting and exasperating at the same time. I wanted the text and the music to inform the images, but not to illustrate them. So I kept, I listened to the sound, I read through the text, but I wanted them to function in a way, the way a child falling asleep hears the baseball game that his parents are listening to off in the distance, mm-hmm. so that there's not a one-to-one match. And that was how I moved into working with the music.
And the images are being projected?
The images are being projected.
Okay,
yes.
And how did you create the images? Based on the texts that you were provided with, or was it a collaboration on that front as well?
It was the text. I think the text was the first thing that we had. Mm-hmm. And then Kurt sent the beginnings of the music. So I had access to both of those things. And I began making experiments that ranged from layering close-ups of my paintings to plunging things into water and making a video of what happened and eroding, taking images and wearing them away and keeping a document of that. So it was very experimental.
So it's really, you're not leaving your images static at all.
Not at all.
Quite active.
Yes.
You reminded me of an anecdote I heard Joni Mitchell say on one of her recordings. She was, you know, busy in this huge crowd of audience and tuning her guitar, and people are saying, play this, play that, you know, play this tune again. And she comments on the mic. She says, you know, that's always struck me as the difference between a performing artist and, say, a visual artist like Van Gogh. Like, no one went up to Van Gogh and said, hey, paint a stormy night again.
Right. Exactly. It's done. And it's finished.
And will these performances be different as well? Or is there any improvisatory element to this performance?
There are small, very limited improvisatory elements. Because we had to set some parameters that were fixed.
Mm-hmm.
So the text in and of itself is the most fixed part of the piece. And then the music is less fixed. And I have worked into the music places where the speaker can be more, while the words and the reciting of the words has to go from point A to point B, it is actually relatively flexible inside of between point A and point B. And then on top of that, there's the entire issue of being with the video.
Yeah.
And so how do you make sure you're starting with the video where you need to start and ending with the video where you need to end? So I had to work in little, they're almost like modules.
Vamps.
Yeah. That allow for us to accommodate that
mm-hmm.
in performance. So there will be slight differences in every performance of
uh-huh.
these.
So Francis, your first collaboration with the musical arts, has the bug been bitten? Do you want to do more? Do you want to go back to your easel in the countryside? What's your next move?
I would say it's been very exciting. I would not take it up lightly again, but I know for a fact it will inform my future paintings.
Simulated part of your brains that the brain has not been fully explored.
Exactly.
Yet.
Yeah. Exactly.
Kurt, now the rest of this program, it's this theme of portraits and sound is further explored in a contemporary piece by Carl Schimmel.
Mm-hmm.
It's supposedly inspired by 6 Cubist portraits from the early 20th century. And the piece was written for the Left Coast Chamber Ensemble. And also will be presented with some projected images. Can you talk about that piece a little bit and maybe the rest of the program?
Sure. So Carl Schimmel's Second String Quartet is called Six Faces, and each of the movements is based on a Cubist painting, and these are paintings by Braque and Picasso and Gris. And
Francis, you're in good company then, huh?
Yes,
I guess so.
Metzinger. The piece itself was work that we commissioned a couple years ago because we played Carl's first string quartet. He actually won our composition competition, if I'm not mistaken, several years back. And we really liked that piece a great deal. And then we had subsequently played another piece of his, which we also enjoyed. And then we asked him for the string quartet. The piece is very much a set of character pieces. But something that I really like about the piece is that if you don't have the images, and if you were not to know that, in fact, it were a piece about paintings, and those specific paintings, it's still a really, really good piece of music. So it's nice that it has that type of complexity and sophistication. And we will be projecting the actual paintings during the performance of that particular.
Also some music by Ravel and Debussy on the
right.
program.
And that's just also, these are short works that are image inspired. So The Girl with the Flaxen Hair, we have Ondine and Alvarado de Grazio. So
nice. It should be a lovely program.
Yeah.
Could you share with us just a little bit about the rest of the season?
Sure. We will be having, over the course of the 2012-2013 season, we have five concerts. And the concerts are in Mill Valley at the 142 Throckmorton Theater and at the San Francisco Conservatory of Music or the Dennis Gallagher Arts Pavilion, which is at the International School, I believe. Mm-hmm. And our concert in December is called Night Music, and that is a concert that is going to be featuring as its centerpiece the Schoenbrug for Klarinett for string sextet and Benjamin Britten's Nocturnal for solo guitar and the Gershwin Lullaby. The January concert is called Clear Water, which is a concert that is themed around water and how it is articulated in music. So we have works by Takemitsu, Debussy, Young Lee, and George Crumb's Voice of the Whale, Vox Ballena. And then the concert that we're going to be having in March, which is To Schumann with Love, which is sort of an interesting concert because not only are we going to be having Robert Schumann's music, but also Clara Schumann's music, which is a piece, you know, her piano. Now, I can't remember if we're doing the Piano Trio or the Romances for Oboe. It's one of those two pieces.
Now, those Romances for Oboe work quite well with flute, by the way.
Okay, I might. I'll let them know that. I'm
sure Stacey would play them very well.
I don't know them. I don't know the Romances. So.
Well, we can learn more about the full season of the Left Coast Chamber Ensemble at the website.
And the website is www.leftcoastensemble.org.
Kurt Rohde's piece, World Premiere of Artifacts, a rendering for speaker, small ensemble, and projected images. Projected images created by painter Francis McCormick can be heard this coming weekend, or actually the 30th of September, which is a Sunday in Mill Valley, Monday, October 1st, in San Francisco at the San Francisco Conservatory of Music. Francis McCormick, thanks so much for taking a little time today.
Thank you.
And Kurt Rohde, best of luck with all of your endeavors.
Thanks a lot. Thanks
again, more information on their website, leftcoastchamberensemble.org. Kurt mentioned one of the other works on this upcoming concert of the Left Coast, Carl Schimmel's String Quartet No. 2, Six Faces. Here's a brief excerpt of that work. Well, exactly, not exactly John Cage, more like John Cage's 4 minutes and 33 seconds, thanks to the website interface here. Apologies for that. Carl Schimmel's work, String Quartet, Six Faces, will be performed Sunday and Monday, a week from Sunday and Monday, as part of the Left Coast Chamber Ensemble that will also include the world premiere of Kurt Rohde's Artifacts. Kurt Rohde's CD is out now as well. It's a collection of his chamber music described as where visceral music artfully meets the insightful and features performances by violinist Axel Strauss, pianist Genevieve Fei-Wen Lee, members of the Left Coast Chamber Ensemble and the Empyrean Ensemble in various settings. Learn more at kurtrohde.com. That's KURTROHDE.com. Good afternoon. David LaTulipe in for Alan Farley and KALW's Open Air, our arts and culture program, heard every Thursday at 1 o'clock. It is the last day and the last, oh, I'd say it's the last hour or so of our fall membership drive. We're just a couple $1,000s away from our goal of $325,000. Encourage you to become a member of KALW if you're not already one. Perhaps offer an additional gift or renew your membership. It all counts. Every click, every phone call counts. Go to kalw.org or call 800-525-9917. It'll be the last time we come to you until May to ask for money. So make that donation now. Help us end it in this hour. 800-525-9917. Some tickets to be given away shortly. Stay with us. Diane Gruby joins me in studio now. In addition to being a fine fellow flutist, Diane is director of the Trinity Chamber Concerts. Another ambitious season of concerts ahead. Tell us how this series started, Diane.
The series started 39 years ago. We're in our 39th season.
Wow.
I'm not sure everybody's aware of that.
And you don't look a day over 40.
Thank you very much. I've been running the series for only about 7 years.
Okay.
So I've only been involved for a short time. But I wasn't around when it started, but I believe it was a member of the congregation at Trinity Chapel who started it out. And it's always been a chamber music. It's a small space. So it's always been about small ensembles, chamber music or soloists. And it's always been about local Bay Area or even Northern California performers only. And I've really stuck to that because we have so many gifted performers here in the Bay Area. So I feature them only. And that gives us plenty of people to play.
All these concerts take place at Trinity Chapel on Dana Street in Berkeley.
Right.
How is this? How do you populate such a big series?
It's not hard. Many people know about it. I get so many proposals. So it's easy to find great people to play on it. And I want to include as many people as possible. So it's not like I'm turning people away. It's just a challenge to get room for everybody because I limit it to 20 concerts a season. I don't think I could handle any more.
Right. That is quite a bit. And so tell me a little bit about this season.
Well, this season started just about 2 weeks ago with a new Esterházy Quartet. That was a very exciting start for us. Very well attended, just a wonderful concert. As all of our seasons are, it's very diverse, which is what I'm going for. So we have early music. Like I said, we started with early music. We have contemporary music. We have soloists and ensembles. So it's super, super diverse. So we have more early music coming up in December with Flauti Diversi. Our next show, as you know, will be this Saturday, the Black Cedar Duo Flute and Guitar. We have a guitar soloist later. We have a trio of violin, French horn, and piano, the Classical Collective. String quartets, we have an oboe and piano duo coming up. So just super varied, which is what I really like about it.
And in a beautiful setting, boy.
Yes.
Chapel is absolutely gorgeous.
It's lovely and very live, so the sound is just beautiful, no matter who the performers are.
Well, through the magic of radio, this would normally be a live performance on Thursday at 1 o'clock, but we're pre-taping this, so live to tape, we're going to hear this, one of the ensembles that's featured at the Trinity Chamber Concerts this weekend, in fact, on Saturday, September 22nd at 8 o'clock, the Black Cedar Duo, which is Chris Palmer on various flutes, and Steve Lin on guitar, will perform for us now. We'll talk with them after we hear some music. Okay, here we go.
Sorry about that. Sorry, I have to tune a little.
That's all right.
When I babble during our concerts, while
you
okay.
Let me know when you're ready. Are we good?
Yeah.
Hold on. I'm going to take a cue until we get a blink. Music from the Black Cedar Duo, which is Chris Palmer and Steve Lin. Chris on flutes and recorder. That wasn't a flute this time around. Chris, what were you playing for that tune?
That was a soprano recorder.
Wonderful. And Steve, the type of guitar you're using, is this specific for this style of music, or is this your go-to guitar?
No, this is my concert guitar. It was made by a good friend and a wonderful luthier. His name is Stephen Connor. He lives on Cape Cod in the Boston area.
Oh, lovely. What was that piece we heard?
That was Come Away, Come Sweet Love by the Renaissance master John Dowland.
John Dowland piece. Wonderful. Can we hear a little bit more music? Well, let's hear first. How did you guys first start collaborating?
Well,
I really wanted to do flute and guitar, so I just kind of did some research on who was who. I think Jerry Snyder of the South Bay Guitar Society, I first contacted him, and he gave me some names, and one of the people that he highly recommended was Steve Lin. So I checked out his website, and he just sounded fantastic on the website, and yeah.
Wonderful.
And there we are. I emailed him, and I just pretty much said, here I am. Work with me.
Steve, I understand you're a professor of guitar at San Jose State University. And Chris, you're a former member of the New Mexico Symphony Orchestra.
Yes.
Are you doing any orchestral playing these days, or is it more chamber for you?
I do a lot of the chamber, but I do work a lot with Santa Cruz Symphony and Santa Cruz Ballet. They're wonderful people to work with, and I'm thankful to be able to go down there and play for them.
Wonderful. So a little bit of everything. It's nice to have
it's fun.
A varied career.
Good.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
And Steve, other playing that you do other than down at the university?
Yeah. I have some solo concerts here and there, and every now and then I go back to Asia, to Taiwan, the Philippines, to play solo concerts. And it's an amazing opportunity for me to get to travel and play for people.
Well, I, for one, would like to hear a little bit more music. What else do you have for us today?
Well, we have a movement from Robert Beezer's Grammy-nominated collection of American folk tunes. This is The House Carpenter. Once people hear the melody, they might recognize it. It's an old favorite Appalachian folk melody. And he compiled these together for flute and guitar. I believe it was published in 1985. It was nominated for a Grammy, so they're quite beautiful. House Carpenter.
House Carpenter. Now, before you start playing that, I'm noticing not your father's flute, as one would say. I'm a flutist. I see that's a very different. It's not a metal flute or a gold or silver flute. What are you playing?
I play on a flute made of grenadilla, which is an African blackwood. And that sounds exotic. It's the same wood that is used to make your clarinets and your oboes. So it's black. It looks like a clarinet or an oboe, except you're holding it out to the side instead of out in front.
Okay, and how is that sound different for you from other flutes that you play?
I like it. I think people describe it usually as it's darker. It doesn't have the brilliance that a wonderful player on gold might have. And I love the sound of gold flute and silver flute, but this is just different, and I like this too. I think it's darker, maybe sweet.
Let's
darker
and
sweet.
Yeah. Great, go ahead.
I have to retune.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay.
A little yin and yang here.
So
Steve's retuning his guitar here. Always nice to hear from the Chinese composer Tu Ning as we go along here.
Is kind of where we got our name. I have a black flute, and his guitar is made of cedar, so there you go.
Oh, all right. Cedar. Very nice. And remind us what we're going to hear again.
House Carpenter, an old Appalachian folk tune, but this setting is the creation of composer Robert Beezer, American composer Robert Beezer.
Thank you. The Appalachian folk tune House Carpenter in a setting by Robert Beezer, performed by guests of Open Air, Black Cedar Duo, Chris Palmer on a Grenadilla flute, and Steve Lynn on guitar. I'm David LaTulipe in for Alan Farley, and Open Air here on this Thursday through the magic of radio. This is pre-recorded for Thursday. Wonderful playing. Thanks so much for sharing that.
That's a pleasure to be here.
And this is part of a concert that's going to be on this Saturday, September 22nd at 8 o'clock at Trinity Chamber Concerts in Berkeley, 2320 Dana Street. Tell us about some other performances you have coming up.
Well, after Trinity, we are playing for the last Friday concert series, which is sponsored by the organization Bach, Bay Area Classical Harmonies. And they're going to have us play at the Pro Arts Gallery in Oakland, downtown Oakland, Frank Agawa Plaza, the Pro Arts Gallery. That's on Friday, October 26th. And we are thrilled because Shane Carrasco, cellist Shane Carrasco, is joining us on a piece by Cambodian-born composer Chinari Ung, Luminous Spirals. And we just performed that piece with Shane this last weekend. It is wild in a ethereal, luminous, gorgeous way. It's beautiful. I'm not quite sure how to describe it.
I do know how to describe it. Actually, one of my students at San Jose State came up to me and said, it sounds like you're being chased through a jungle, like a Cambodian jungle. And it's endless and it's restless.
Wow.
But in the end, it just kind of settles down and it fizzles, and slowly, slowly, this tension that built up over 10 minutes slowly fizzles out over the last 2 minutes.
Very nice. Well, share with us your website so we can find out more about you.
blackcedar.biz. We are actually a .biz. Or if you just Google Black Cedar Duo, you'll come across us.
Thanks again for spending a little time with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Diane Gruby, thanks for sharing some information about the Trinity Chamber Concerts.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you so much for having us all on today.
Of course. More information about that series at trinitychamberconcerts.com. Chris Palmer and her husband Richard just became members of KLW this week. Thanks, Chris. I should also add that Diane Gruby is also a member of the acclaimed woodwind quintet Quinteto Latino, or Latino. Information about their upcoming performance is at quintetolatino.org. And I should mention that their horn player, Armando Castellano, just became a member of KLW during this fall membership drive as well. Thank you, Armando. To conclude today's broadcast, another work that will be performed as part of the Left Coast Chamber Ensemble program, Portraits and Sound. Here's an excerpt from Alborada del Gracioso from Maurice Ravel's Miroir. While that is playing, I am pleased to offer some tickets to the Black Cedar Flute Guitar Duo's Trinity Chamber Concert for this coming Saturday at 8 in Berkeley. Three pairs being offered to callers to our studio line, 415-841-4134. Again, tickets for Saturday evening in Berkeley at the Trinity Chamber Concert, 841-4134, the Black Cedar Duo for part of the Trinity Concerts. was pianist Pascal Roget in that recording of music of Maurice Ravel, the Alborada del Gracioso from Miroir. Left Coast pianist Eric Zivian to perform that this weekend. Concert information at leftcoastensemble.org. And that's all the time we have for Open Air this week. I'm David LaTulipe in for Alan Farley.